miss anybody. My name is Dennis. We're going to be talking about the seventh precept. Do not praise self or blame others. Maintain modesty and extol virtue. That is the topic of the night. I think there's, one or two more precepts after this?
They end on May 30th.
Generosity, okay. Anger, and defaming.
Okay. So, three more. So, the continuing series. So, to start off with, I guess, I will read the precept. In the realm of an equitable dharma, not dwelling upon I versus you is the precept of not praising self or blaming others. All Buddhas and ancestors realize the empty sky and the great earth. When they manifest the noble body, there is neither inside nor outside in emptiness. When they manifest the Dharma body, not even a speck of dust is seen upon the ground. When I first started thinking about about this talk and preparing for it, I kind of realized that this precept seemed to embody several other precepts, as well as the essence of what Buddhist practice is all about. It points us towards equanimity, compassion, and a true realization of interdependent origination, as well as not knowing mind. That's one of my favorites, like working on that not knowing mind thing. The other precepts are basically social governance rules, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't abuse sex, do not cloud the mind with intoxicants, etc. And not that these are unimportant, but I think this precept not praising self or blaming others points us towards a better points us towards being better human beings, advancing down the path of finding our true nature, and not just keeping us in line and not being offensive members of society. So, so I think this precept is more difficult for us Western converts than people who were raised in a Buddhist culture. In Japan, it seemed like this precept was actually interwoven into the social structure, because basic Buddhist concepts are learned from a very young age, and it's just a, kind of assimilated behavior at a very early age. It would be pretty much unheard of for someone to bring flattering attention to themselves or their family. That doesn't always seem to be the case here, but it's pretty much the rule over there. We're raised to value individuality and self-promotion. In the West, generally personal freedom overrides what benefits the group, which is the opposite in most Buddhist countries, especially in the East. So, a personal story about this, I don't know if I can relate this and if I can get it out just right, but I was out after work with several Japanese friends. We were having an intense conversation about something. I don't remember the topic, but there was a lot of back and forth. And somebody said in Japanese that my Japanese was perfect. I misunderstood that and thought they said it was okay, which I thought it was passable, but it certainly wasn't perfect. So I repeated that and said, yes, my Japanese is perfect. Totally mistaken. And everybody's face like just, whoa, what's this guy talking about? And I could tell something was wrong. What did I say? The guy sitting next to me could speak good English, and he said, just told them that your Japanese was perfect. So that's not what I meant to say. I thought they said it was okay, because it is just okay. But it was a glaring example of, you know, don't call attention to yourself. It's, you know, it was embarrassing. The whole mood of the group just changed at the drop of a hat. So it's kind of funny. We laughed about it later. And, needless to say, I never got those two words confused again. So, in every other instance I can recall, when someone did brag about themselves in Japan, it was considered a joke. It was like just a way to make people laugh, because it was so unheard of or absurd. Personal humility is the rule, almost to a fault by our standards. When a Japanese man introduces his wife or his family, he'll say moderately derogatory or slightly unflattering things, just so as not to seem presumptuous or bring honor to himself. The word for wife, when introducing your wife, is kanai. It's made up of two kanji, meaning inside and house. So the wife is the inside the house person. That's kind of all she gets. So, and that's generally how a man introduces his wife. Not the most flattering way to do that, but the idea is basically you don't want to show that you're any better than anybody else, and they especially pour it on more when it's someone of a higher or an equal rank. Unfortunately, that doesn't go both ways. When the wife introduces her husband, she generally uses the honorific term, go shujin. And introductions to children are similar. People will fawn over the kids as they do here and say, oh, they're really smart, they're really cute, and all that sort of thing. But then dad will come back and say, well, yeah, he's pretty good at baseball, but his grades are terrible. And everybody knows that he's just saying that, because he's supposed to. It's just part of the protocol. Yeah. But again, it's just part of this ingrained behavior that is learned from being in a ambient Buddhist culture, I guess, for lack of a better term. So this precept also directly ties into interdependent origination. If we are able to truly embrace this concept, there'd be no need to praise ourselves. When we realize we are one with everything, heaping praise on ourselves would be foolish and pointless. We would have an understanding that because we are one with the universe, we are what we are, and making ourselves seem anything besides our true self would be self-defeating to the process of seeing things as they really are. That was kind of convoluted, but I think you get the message. So it also relates to the concept of not knowing mind. When we criticize someone, we're finding fault with their speech, behavior, or action. We're forming an unfavorable opinion based on our perception and value judgments. This in and of itself is wrong, if for no other reason that it's dualistic and divisive. To quote Roshi Bodwin Kohide, buying into the notion of separation is the closest thing we have in Zen to a sin. So that was pretty profound.
To a sin? Is that what you said?
Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry, I'll try and speak up. In many cases, we have no idea if the opinion we formulated is valid or not. We don't know what led up to this offensive behavior that we're objecting to, but We use only our limited perspective, the snapshot in time, to make this judgment. I think more often than not, many situations are just like this, where we see and judge things with a very limited dualistic view. I'm going to have to put my cheaters on here. Dogen quotes an example from the Yogacara school of Buddhism on the four views and on one and the same water. Again, not knowing mind concept. The text says that human beings see water as water. Heavenly beings see water as a jeweled necklace. Hungry ghosts see water as raging flame or as pus and blood. Dragons and fish see it as their palace or dwelling. Thus, depending on our karmic consciousness, we see the thing called water as many different things. Depends on your perspective, definitely. So when I started thinking about this precept, I realized it connected to several other precepts. And I came across an article by Roshi Bodhin Kohide, the abbot of the Rochester Zen Center. He was a student of Philip Kaplow, the author of Three Pillars of Zen. The article he wrote, the talk he gave, pretty much hit the nail on the head. He said the same things. So I basically just pulled several paragraphs out of his talk and kind of want to share those as part of showing that this precept just encompasses several of the others. So Roshi Koide says, I would nominate these two precepts as the most difficult to avoid breaking in one's daily life. Let's consider number six first. Not to speak of the fault of others. Anyone who works with other people knows how much fault-finding goes on in the workplace. It's so easy to see other people's faults, isn't it? We're so much quicker to notice theirs than we are to turn our attention around and see our faults. We're always at work trying to preserve a palpable image of ourselves. Palatable image of ourselves. Here, work is the key, since the cause is not just lack of awareness, but an active denial or disowning of our own faults. There's an innate intelligence in us that knows at some level these are our faults. And we then sometimes relocate it to another. Talking of the faults of others, then, is a convenient way of disavowing our own faults. And this next paragraph kind of ties back to what I said at the beginning of that this precept ties into several other precepts. An interesting way to look at these two precepts is to see how, in violating them, we betray the other eight as well. With respect to the first precept, not to kill, in speaking of the faults of others, or praising ourselves and disparaging others, we are implicitly denying the dynamic nature of the person. Every one of us is a work in progress, living, breathing, and essentially, through regular zazen, changing. None of us is a static ego entity. Yet, in disparaging others or praising ourselves, we are, in effect, repudiating that mutable quality that is our essence, which is itself a kind of killing. At the same time, we are, in our minds, depriving those others of their Buddha nature, their true nature to become Buddha, to realize their intrinsic perfection. Thus, we are also violating the second precept, not to take what is not given, as well as the tenth, not to malign Buddha or the other two treasures. And the fourth, not to lie, but to speak the truth. breaking the sixth and seventh precepts, we also, in a sense, are taking out number three, not to misuse sexuality. This one's kind of a stretch, I think, but hang with me here. Since such speech is a violation of the person and the denial of our underlying intimacy with him or her, number eight, not withholding spiritual aid, and number nine, not indulging anger, since we are succumbing to hostility. Finally, if we interpret the fifth precept, not to abuse alcohol or drugs, figuratively as prohibiting anything that excites or otherwise compromises the inherent clarity of the mind, then it includes fault finding, negative gossip, and disparaging as temptations that are perversely stimulating to most people. So. Here he quotes from a seminar he once attended. Don't complain to anyone who can't do something about what you're complaining about. Do not accept a complaint from anyone unless you can do something about it. Pretty basic, fundamental advice. Because gossip, we're told, can be found in every society and even in every community, we might suspect that it has an evolutionary component to it. Even so, that doesn't mean we should indulge in speaking of faults of others and disparaging others, even if there is an evolutionary basis. Although anthropologists recognize that surplus body fat originally had survival value, in more recent human history, it has become a threat to health. Similarly, when we seem to be wired to mate with many partners as a way to propagate the species, but in most cultures, that evolutionary mandate, when pursued through adultery, causes a world of hurt. In the same way, we create unnecessary suffering through violations of precepts 6 and 7. As long as we are at war with our own shortcomings, we will be quick to find them in others. Conversely, finding ourselves unnecessarily criticizing others points to us, to our shortcomings, points to shortcomings of our own. But this window into the mind is only opened by noticing ourselves. Before we can curb our impulse to find fault or repeat negative gossip, we have to notice it arising. Self-awareness, then, is everything, and that we develop through sitting. Noticing what we're about to say before we say it, that's the pivotal moment. And too often, it's already out of our mouth before we even notice. You let fly with gratuitous remarks, and then later, a little later, maybe a lot later, we have regrets. We're having repeated something we don't know to be true, and then it's simply nasty. This is kind of a reoccurring theme in several of the books we've gone through in the precepts, trying to get out in front of that impulse before the negative karma goes flying. what happens just before that that's going to trigger you to say, all right, take a step back, don't do that, think about it. So it's an interesting technique. So Roshi goes on to say, most of the nickel and dime faults I'm aware of among people practicing in the Zen Center strike me as less consequential than reactions to them that arise out of the strain of self and other. Furthermore, if the transgressor later owns up to them, his statement of contrition often seems to eclipse the transgression. When a student of mine voluntarily admits to some indiscreet conduct or habit of which he is ashamed, the particular transgression recedes behind the strength of character. He has now shown, in confessing it, I think, okay, this is impressive, someone who can own up to what he did. It's good. In addition to character, though, the person shows insight in disclosing the transgression. He's demonstrating that he is disidentified enough with it to put it behind him. I've never had anyone confess to something heinous. I suppose if someone admitted to killing somebody or child molestation, that'd be a different story. But hasn't heard that in his sangha, fortunately. Zazen is the ultimate antidote to the separation that prompts one to break this precept. Through Zazen, little by little, we chip away at this sense of standing apart from others. And by doing so, dissolve the stubborn habit of fault-finding, as well as praising oneself and disparaging others. But until we reach that point of purity, where the thought doesn't even arise in our mind, we can think about these words from Confucius. When we see a good man, think of emulating him. When we see a bad man, examine your own heart. So, thought that was pretty profound. Though we might manage to keep our mouth shut and not criticize people out loud, if we're doing it in our mind, it's hardly a triumph. The core problem here is judging others negatively and oneself positively. It doesn't matter if it's verbalized or not. The issue is the thought. You have to figure out where the source of this feeling or thought comes from. Like we do with any karmic situation, we are trying to understand the root cause. We need to find the source. When we praise ourselves, we are implying there is something wrong with the other. And when we disparage others, we are implying that we're superior. Neither will have a positive outcome for anyone. In relationships outside the workplace, speaking directly to someone about what you perceive as a fault can actually serve to bring you closer together. If your approach is skillful and grows out of faith in the underlying heart mind that unites you, you are affirming that true nature rather than betraying it. This is entirely different from carping about someone to a third party or indulging in underhanded or devious disparagement. When someone gets on your nerves or pushes your button, ask yourself, what is it about that person that seems to bother you far more than anyone else? Who doesn't have such a person in their life? At work, most often, social acquaintance, maybe even a family member. Why does this person's fault carry such a charge for us? Rather than mindlessly attributing it to the person's defects themselves, we might wonder whether those very faults are ours also, but not acknowledged by us. They're too painful to face in ourselves, so when we spot them in another, they become glaring. So it's a good little exercise. I've learned when you identify someone whom you consistently react to or dwell on negatively, to pose the question, okay, what is it in this person that I might have in myself that I don't want to look at? It can be quite revealing. And often it's those who annoy us the most who have the most to teach us. At the very least, they teach us that we have not mastered these two precepts. Someone who has mastered them, though, is the sixth patriarch, Hui Eng. My Chinese pronunciation is terrible. We're told that he once said to his disciple, Shen Hui, "I see, and yet I do not see." The disciple replied, "What do you mean by see but not see?" The teacher replied, "Seeing, I constantly see the errors and faults of my own mind. Not seeing, I do not see other people's rights and wrongs, goodnesses and evil." The sixth grave precept, not discussing faults of others, Bodhidharma said, "Self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the flawless Dharma, not expounding upon error is called the precept of not speaking of faults of others." Dogen Zenji said, "In the Buddha Dharma, there is one path, one Dharma, one realization, one practice. Don't permit fault-finding. Don't permit haphazard talk. The seventh grave precept, not praising yourself while abusing others. Dogen says, Buddhas and ancestral teachers realize the empty sky and the great earth. When they manifest the noble body, there is neither inside nor outside in emptiness. When they manifest the Dharma body, there is not even a bit of earth on the ground. Do not inflate your pride by disparaging, by degrading others. Seventh of the 10th of the 10 Buddhist precepts states that it's wrong to put down other people to make yourself feel better. For example, by mocking, criticizing, or comparing them to someone else. Doing these things is tempting sometimes because self-righteousness feels good. And thinking that you're more skilled, intelligent, or better than someone else makes you feel like a superior person. But just the opposite's really true. If you have to put others down to make yourself feel good, you are only demonstrating your insecurity and small-mindedness. And when was the last time you heard somebody putting another person down? Were you impressed? Did you think they were a superior person? Probably not. Instead, I guess you were rather disgusted with their self-righteous behavior. This last paragraph is not attributed to Roshi Koide, but I will read it and tell you who wrote it when I'm done. My name is Gossip. I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I'm cunning and malicious and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society. My victims are helpless. They cannot protect themselves against me because I have no name and no face. To track me down is impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I'm nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it never is quite the same. I topple governments, wreck marriages, I ruin careers, cause sleepless nights, heartache, and indigestion. I spawn suspicion and generate grief. I make innocent people cry. Even my name hisses. I'm called gossip. Office gossip, shop gossip, party gossip. I make headlines and heartaches. Before you repeat a story, ask yourself, is it true? Is it fair? Is it necessary? If not, shut up. And this is from the great sage Ann Landers from the Washington Post in 1999. So that's basically all I had. I apologize for reading it so much, but as I said, this person seemed to articulate my ideas better than I could, so it just kind of ended up that way. But I guess I'd like to throw it open to discussion. If people have ideas on how to actually help to adhere to this precept, you know, how to avoid gossip, how to avoid even unintentionally making yourself seem better than others. Or any other comments on any of the things that we covered here?
Like, keep an eye on raised hands.
Yeah. Oh, Leah. Oh, she moved. Where did Leah? Oh, there she is. Okay.
Hi.
Hi, Leah.
Hi, Dennis. Dennis, that was a good talk. I struggle with this one. As I'm trying to understand the precepts, I like to simplify them and try to line them up with one of the seven deadly sins, if possible. And This one seems to me like it's the vanity one. Pride and vanity is in this one, I think. I because it says, do not praise self and then maintain modesty. So, and if that's the case, if this is about pride and vanity, then I'm in trouble because I've been raised, my karma is such that, you know, I've been told many times, you must have self-confidence. You must present yourself to the world in a very beautiful and positive and confident way. You have to sell yourself all the time. And that's what I've been going in to the old noggin for my whole life. So yeah, I'm working with that, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know if self-confidence spills over into arrogance or self-indulgence or praising self. I mean, there's kind of a fine line there. I mean, that's, you know, doesn't sound like a totally bad trait, but I guess to an extreme, it would be.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm working with that line. And if this is the vanity one, then I'm working with that too. So.
Okay. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
There was a whole nother chapter on what do you do when you break these precepts? Because everybody does. I mean, this is the most common one that people break. And the next portion was the Repentance Sutra. I think everybody knows that one. So once you break the precept, you go to the Repentance Sutra. I think the differences between East and West are pretty glaring in this, especially. I remember several instances when I was living in Japan where, you know, you'd be in a big crowd or something, and you'd be, if you were here, you'd be worried about someone cutting in front of you or not getting, you know, not getting what you were there for or whatever. And I never had that feeling there. It just seemed like everything was going to work out. Everybody was going to wait till everybody else got what they needed. And it was just kind of a general feeling of watching out for everybody and not pushing to the head of the crowd. So, Judith.
Betty's got her hand.
Oh, Betty. Yes, thank you. Hi, Betty.
Hello. I can wait if Judith wants to go first. Okay, shall I carry on?
Yes, please.
The two precepts, you know, the dwelling on past mistakes and this one, not praising self and or praising self and blaming others, that they're so related in my head in terms of just kind of reinforcing this whole cycle of kind of dwelling on somebody's past mistakes and blaming them for their past mistakes and just blaming people for, you know, whatever their situation is, and then talking about it kind of reinforces my dwelling on the past mistakes. And it's just this kind of vicious cycle. And this habit energy of doing this really gets in my way and closes the door on, like, you know, forgiveness and being and trying to be compassionate, you know. And the compassion is the thing that I need to do in order to kind of get through it, to get over this and stop doing it. But doing it in itself sort of gets in the way of my being compassionate. It's just sort of this like neuroplasticity, you know. I do it and it reinforces the behavior. And so work in progress, but thank you for talking about it. And if you have any suggestions on how to be better, let me know.
looking for the same suggestions.
Weird. I'm really talking to them and them, but I'm looking at you. This is weird. This is the thing about the precepts. Whether you're building up to Jukai, or maybe you've already been through Jukai and now you're going through the precepts a second time and you're taking a you're looking at it in a slightly different way. Now I got to get serious, or whatever your changed attitude is. Whether you decide to be a vegetarian or not, whether you eat meat or not, in my own case, I never look at a cheeseburger the same again. It just gets caught in your mind. And the more I begin to think about it over time, over years, I might think, gosh, it's my birthday. I really want a cheeseburger and fries. And it's just not that great. It's not as great as it used to be. And I think that's the way they all work, sort of. For better or worse, these precepts are written, do not do this. So, there's not doing it. And then there's compassion and empathy and forgiveness and all these places you can go, but the precept isn't asking you to do that. If I'm headed in the wrong direction, and I need to correct my course, I'll correct it like that. I will not correct it like that, if you know what I'm saying. So I think we have to be, we have to go easy on ourselves a little bit. This is not easy stuff. One thing that I think of, and you put this in my mind when you said, forgiveness suture, what did you call it?
Repentance.
You meant all my past and harmful karma?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So the karma verse.
Yes.
I'm a big believer in when I've done something wrong, I admit it. Just as soon as I get it, I say, you know what, I'm really sorry I did that. That was not right. Because that makes me pay attention to it. And if I have to make that apology again and again and again, I got to really look at what I'm doing. Because now that is a piece of behavior. This isn't just a slip up. This is something you really have to work with. So I think to a great extent, going through the precepts as we do, every spring, it just helps us, it helps me to build up that layer of intention, just to keep adding to it, because so much of it has to do with intention. So much of it has to do with what I really meant to do. I did not mean to hurt your feelings. I did not mean to put that person down. But you did, so then you have to deal with that. But I think this is stuff that we do in layers and we do over time, and we're not gonna be perfect ever, and we may not be better tomorrow. It's just the way it is, at least for me.
I think you're saying it's like assimilated behavior. You make little corrections over time, and after a while, it just becomes what you do. You learn to do the right thing and not do the wrong things.
Over time, little by little.
Well, like you were saying, your cheeseburger analogy,
Yeah.
If you had a cheeseburger, that wasn't so great.
I ate one in front of Damien once. It was the worst cheeseburger I'd ever had.
I had a similar experience. I quit drinking for several months. just thought it takes up too much time. I'm not clear-headed, and I just stopped for several months. I was cooking something and dumped some wine in, so I finished the rest. It's awful. It's like, why did I do that? It's like, you know, it just, so I kind of definitely see what you mean. So I think Judith was next. No.
She was just pointing somebody out.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, John. Hi, John.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Sir.
Thank you, Dennis, for a very thorough coverage of this precept. I've got a question. Switching it around, what about praising others and blaming self? I would initially think that would be okay, but when you talk about the culture of Japan, where nobody wants to be, you know, stick out or whatever, actually praising other people's puts them in an odd spot. But the other aspect is, you know, it's really not dwelling upon I versus you. So praising others, blaming yourself seems like it might be, you know, in violation of the precept. I was just curious if you had any wise words on that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm pretty short on wise words, but I'll give it my best. I honestly don't remember people praising a lot in Japan. Well, you know, I take that back. That's not true. People that would just come over there and they'd say a few words in Japanese. They say, "Oh, your Japanese is so great." Well, it's not, you know, really, I know it's not. but the same thing, it's just cultural, just to be nice, to be ingratiating and welcoming. You did see a lot of that. But yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I never really thought of it in reverse like that.
Thank you.
As I said, this kind of seems to go back to all the karma work that we do. How do you get out in front of it? You know, Diane Rossetto book that we read for precepts last time had some techniques for catching yourself before you say something you don't mean, or you say something that's wrong or offensive or whatever. And that discussion we did on the Pema Chodron article as well, you know, it was basically the same thing, just how to get out in front of this type of behavior. What are the triggers that just before I get angry, you know, I feel my shoulders tense up, or, you know, some other physical or mental cue pops up before I do something that I wish I hadn't. So, I don't know if anybody else has any techniques that they want to share or have any ideas on how you personally handle something like that.
I don't have a direct answer to that question, but I think I'm kind of agreeing with Jinryu in my own experience, because when I first started working on speech in particular, which I think is just one of the most difficult things, it would just come out anyway. But it was only through mindfully paying attention to that whole process and noticing how it made me feel afterwards, right? Noticing, like, the why. We're like, ugh.
Why did I do that?
Yeah. And because I would get into, I think, as many people would, you know, you get together with somebody and it's actually can be connecting when you're bad-mouthing somebody else that you know, and you're like, oh, whether it's a group of people or it's somebody you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we're all just like, and... And it feels so exciting and justifying and connecting. But after, you know, studying the precepts for a while, like afterwards, I would just feel kind of sick. like this awful after effect, right? So then I feel like just kind of paying attention to that, then, you know, start noticing right after the conversation. Oh, darn it. Mm-hmm. And then you notice in the middle of the conversation, but you can't stop. And then you notice, you know, before, but you still can't stop. And then, you know, finally you can get to a point where it's like, I see where this is going. I'm going to at least not do it, right? But on another note that, like, I really like to parse things out. And so what, discriminating between the previous precept and this precept can be tough, especially the way that we translate them. But I look a little bit to, like, well, what was it originally? And the last precept really was about speech. It really was about haphazard talk. And then this one, I mean, obviously this can manifest in speech too, like you're saying, but I guess for me, I do think, like somebody brought it up, this is more about comparing myself to others. This is somehow, this is building my sense of self compared to you, whether, and like John was saying, sometimes it's lower, right? Everybody's great and I suck. You know, it's judging our well-being, it's finding our sense of self compared to other people, and it's telling us that is not fruitful. So, and then what do we do instead? I don't know, like the precepts end with to do something by ourselves without copying others is to be an example to the world.
That point's, my talk. Just saying.
I will say anything more.
Okay.
I think, yeah, the quote from Roshi Koide about separating, I'm trying to find it, I had it bolded here, about separating self from other. Buying into the notion of separation is the closest thing we have in Zen to a sin. And I think that's kind of what you were getting at.
Saying it, say that again, please.
Buying into separation is the closest thing we have in Zen to a sin.
Yeah.
Not separate.
So. Oh, yeah, I have that.
Brian, from Vancouver Island.
Maybe I'm an outlier on this one, unfortunately. I looked at the precept as not praising yourself while if it affects another person negatively. To me, that was very important. I mean, I've been attending the other groups of metta meditation and the grieving group. And one of the things that they tore me apart with was the fact that I didn't understand what self-nurturing was and self-compassion was, and basically liking myself. And what I was been doing is I actually have been praising myself, but not at the expense of somebody else. There's a podcaster, a video guy, Jason Stevenson. I mean, his video is, I am good. I am healthy. I am a nice guy. And the whole thing is about affirmations. And as a result of that, I think it's not about praising ourselves. It's what the intent of praising ourselves. What are we trying to accomplish it? Are we trying to put other people down? If we're trying to put people down, yeah, it's wrong. If you're trying to build yourself up to feel, you know, I've gone through a narcissistic divorce where for years I was being put down. I will still put myself up. I will still try and take care of myself. And I don't see anything that the precept is about not talking good thoughts about yourself and building yourself up. It's about why are you doing it? And if you're doing it to hurt other people, to put other people down, then yes, it's wrong. I mean, I've lived in Asia a very large portion of my life. And yes, I know they don't like to praise themselves, but I just spent like 5 hours writing a memo today, like a long 5-page one, where after I was finished, I had to go back in and remove all the I's. Go back to, oh, I can't say, I said this. I said, Brian says this. The defendant says this. It was trying to depersonalize it. But it's just natural that we do put ourselves in that tense. But I think there's nothing wrong with praising yourself. And in fact, I think it's required, because there's a lot of people out there who are going to put you down, but not at the expense of hurting anybody. I guess that's all I got to say.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's essential part of our path to figure out who we really are. It's our Buddha nature, you know, to try and figure out who this person is. But if it's appraising yourself and comparing yourself to others, the comparison part is where the problem comes in. You know, I'm much smarter than him. I'm much bigger than him, better than him, whatever. Therein lies the problem. But I think you're absolutely right. Having those conversations with yourself about, I'm okay. I mess up once in a while, but basically I'm okay. I'll just keep going, you know. It's an interesting observation, Brian. Thanks. Something else that really jumped out at me here. If there's no other comments, I guess we can close a minute or two early. We offer the merit of this Sangha discussion to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you, everyone.
Great talk, Dennis. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.